You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework.
I think the other element that's important from a business perspective is we know most businesses want to run hybrid workloads. The frustrating part for most of the businesses is they didn't feel there was a really good standard to essentially control all these devices in the data centers.
Welcome to the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich, Chief Research Officer at DevOps Institute. Some of you might remember what a sysadmin does, and others might not. I do, and I remember the hard work when I was in that role. I was part of a giant data center consolidation many years ago, and I was a sysadmin in the year Y2K, or year 2000. Okay, I know that dates me, but I don't really care. However, when I hear people saying that the data center is dead, I have a very strong reaction because it's not true. That is why I've invited two thought leaders and founders who have architected and designed a solution which focuses on the work in the data center. And today, as I said, we have two leaders which have created a very interesting solution called Medify, or a company called Medify. We'll talk about the solution in a little bit. Let me introduce the two gentlemen. So first one, Michael Wagner, is a co-founder and CEO of Medify. He began his career in 1995 as a network engineer when he joined IBM while still attending the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He worked in several senior management positions at IBM in Boston and San Diego before joining Red Hat in 2010. Michael was head of channel sales and alliances for North America at Red Hat. He was one of the creators of Red Hat's Apex partner program for system integrators, implementing OpenShift Kubernetes solutions in his final role before launching Medify. The second person is Ian Evans. He is co-founder and CTO of Medify. He began his career in 1999 as the director of IT for Quintus Resorts. He got his first taste of working in software startup when he next joined Wasabi Systems. As director of product management at Wasabi, Ian was deeply involved in all aspects of product development and strategy. Ian's broad expertise in cutting-edge infrastructure technology led him to multiple senior architect positions with some of the top technology companies on the planet, including AWS, Verizon, Lockheed Martin, and Red Hat. Ian's final role before launching Medify was principal architect for the global open solutions practice of WWT's. And welcome to our podcast, management, my wonderful gentlemen.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I call this podcast a glimpse into two co-founders' journey for the data center. It sounds a little bit like Star Trek. I am a Star Trek fan, so hopefully you don't mind. It is great to have you two with us today, and I'm excited for our audience to listen in. So before we talk about Medify, Ian, can you share with me how you two have decided to become co-founders and create Medify? Where have you met? Give us the story.
Sure. Yeah. So I've known Mike for about a little over 4 years. And the idea, we generally started working on a bunch of different technologies around the data center and, you know, in our respective roles. We really saw a lot of limitations around getting the product out to market and doing it in a way that was kind of free of obstacles. So, of course, that started the discussion around starting our own company and starting to figure out how we start to tackle the issues in the data center, but build the product to basically facilitate what we feel need to be done as quickly as possible. So, yeah, you know, we got to start working on all those different technologies. We brought it all into a single product plan, and then we started to make some determinations on what areas of the data center we're going to tackle first. And that really led to the creation of Medify and the wonderful product that we have called Mojo.
So Medify, the name, and does it stand for something?
It does. Medify, it's a portmanteau, a combination of two words. So metal and simplified. So we put the first couple letters of metal, last couple letters of simplify, and you get Medify.
Great. Love that. I bet that was a variety of cycles of thinking, which ideation around the name. That's fantastic. So, Michael, what does Medify do? What is so unique about Medify?
Yeah, so we went against the grain. We saw a need in private cloud and data center space in particular. And as the sort of definition of what a data center is was quickly evolving, the needs of system administrators, the needs of folks that are in infrastructure and operations don't go away. And as that great little meme that was floating around and still is, what is the cloud? It's just somebody else's computer. And that's the reality of it, So for us, we recognize that the hyperscalers have done a great job of automating their infrastructure. And they did such a great job that, the companies all around the world decided, well, let's just get rid of this problem when we're starting off. While the data centers in most of the Fortune 1000 companies really didn't change all that much. If you look at historical spend, data centers have grown as far as server spend and as well as total megawatts, even in the private data centers, have grown consistently every year, and that hasn't changed. Now, cloud and the hyperscalers have grown much faster, but the fact that the data centers are still out there is a testament to the fact that, Fortune 1000 companies that reach a certain size, the economies of having their own hardware makes sense. So it's that kind of question about, do I rent or do I buy? And at some point, it certainly makes sense to buy.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we wanted to make that incredibly simple. We wanted to create it so that, the hard work that, say, Google's and Amazon's have done to make public cloud incredibly consumable, super easy to spin up a server and get the exact hardware profile that you want. We wanted to make that as easy as possible for private organizations to do behind their firewall. And also, there was a big switch going on that really was the impetus for launching things, and where we got our first use case was right on the edge. So, of course, the development of 5G and the need to move compute and storage closer to the customer themselves really led to us, creating a couple different use cases for our product. And I think that's helped drive growth overall. So bottom line is we just wanted to make accessing the hardware, discovering it, provisioning it, and maintaining it as simple as possible. Treat it as a first-class citizen, if you will. All the investment had really gone upstack, into applications and application frameworks and DevOps, in general, like OpenShift and Kubernetes and Docker. That's where all the interest was. But the fact that, everyone was still toiling down at the server level and at the chip level to get these things to talk and get them organized that the way they need to, with the right access and governance, compliance, all those things still existed. It's just somebody else's computer. You can call it a cloud, but at the end of the day, it's a bunch of servers.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep. I understand when you said that you went exactly the opposite to where everybody else has been going, and particularly during the pandemic, people were thinking, oh, we got to move to the cloud. And they took those 2 years or whatever, how many months it has, and they did it. But there's still a whole bunch of, and I wish we could quantify it, how much is still out there. I'm sure Gartner has some data in terms of how many data centers are still out there. All right, great. So where are you going with the vision for Medify? What's the short term, whatever short term means. Short term to me means sometimes a day, but I don't mean tomorrow. But, in 6 months from now, in a year from now, what's your vision forward?
Yeah, so we have an established channel program. So that's a big part of what we do. We've got incredible business partners that we work with. But from a vision perspective, it's really taking the product to a broader audience. We currently, our installation process is something that we're working on right now because we want to make it push button, immediately deployable from our site. So that's a big step for us. But overall, it's just a matter of, continuing to do what we're doing and make more customers aware of it. The footprint that we have right now really covers most sectors. So we've had a great opportunity to work with folks in financial services, as well as media and entertainment, banking, insurance, you name it. We've kind of had we're working with those customers. So that's a great thing. So, you know, from an execution perspective, we want to make sure that we're doing the things that we wanted to do really well, which is the discovery, provisioning, and maintaining of servers themselves, and then expanding that out as we grow into really all of the edge use cases and IoT, the sensors. And mm-hmm. the best part about where we're headed is it's defined already for us, essentially. We leverage open standards. And so the open source communities and the open standards communities that made our product possible are really defining directionally where we go. And from a R&D perspective, that's something I learned from Red Hat. There's really no beating the open source research and development model. There's no beating the open source software development model, because your R&D is essentially handled for you by the community. You mm-hmm. know, and as the community demands something, it gets rolled into the open standard, and then we make it almost instantly accessible inside of our product after we test it and make sure that it works across different hardware profiles. So that's one of the great benefits of having a Red Hat background, is that it showed me the power of open source and the power of open communities overall to really help drive product change and making sure that you're not heading down technical rabbit holes that aren't going to lead to anything. You know, these are mm-hmm. all community driven. And so whenever you're taking your marching orders from people demanding features, you know that there's going to be an audience for it.
Very different culture than it was when I started out in IT, which was in the 90s. I'm glad we're here, and that's very beautiful. I keep telling my daughters, hey, you guys should go into IT, but maybe I had too many ITIL books on my nightstand and they didn't want to do that. So they're in different topics today, but still very successful young ladies. So culture is everything. It says on your whiteboard, Michael, in your office. Little mm-hmm. bird was telling me that. How does that translate in your day to day? Because for us at the DevOps Institute, you know, it's just human angle. We forget there's a lot of talk about tech and all these different things, but the culture and how we work and how people come together is essential. Otherwise, we'll basically are machines. So tell me a little bit about how this culture is everything translates at your day-to-day Medify with your with your customers, with your clients, and everything else.
Yeah, so that's great. Yeah, so from a culture perspective, we really lead with three core elements, if you will. And I think, you know, culture evolves over time in an organization, but as a software startup, we came from large enterprises in the past, and we saw a few things that we thought, okay, if we launched our own, we know exactly what we'd want. So that was another very cool thing of doing a startup, is you get to kind of build it to your dream, right? And Ed and I, our cultural wants in terms of what a company should be were just perfectly aligned. So essentially, it's number one is kindness. So no egos, no pretense, no bad attitudes, right? If you're not having fun, I have the saying, if you're not enjoying it, you're probably in the wrong job. And you know, you should consider other options, right? We enjoy it greatly, coding, and we love what we're doing. The hardware in general, and that intersection of where hardware and software meet is just a really cool space to be. So kindness is number one. Transparency is number two. And transparency, because that enables trust, right? And without trust, you don't have much, especially in a small organization. And you know, you can boil that down to individual teams if you're in a larger organization. But for us, the transparency, you know, we've got a small group of folks here trying to make this dream happen, and that have made the product an award-winning product now, and you know, some amazing customers. So it really has to be there from the very beginning and throughout the build process. So, you know, essentially being able to see what they've done, you know, let's take a look at your code for today, right? How did things go? Always checking in. So transparency is number two. And number three would be consistency. And that's really, you know, you can view that as essentially as self-discipline, right? And the will to collectively work hard towards a common goal. You know, the excitement around our product, Mojo platform, and you know, the fact that we have some really cool customers and that we're working with some of the largest global players in their respective spaces right now, is really exciting. So I think it's much easier to kind of create the collective vision now that the product is built and everyone sees the potential around it. And so it's those are the three main ones, though: kindness, transparency, and consistency. And as long as you have those things in place, you know, you can kind of take on the world.
Ian, I'm sure you get to read that culture is everything when you visit Michael's office. Anything you want to add to that?
I think Mike hit all the major ones for us. I mean, I agree with them. Your humility is a big one for me. You know, I think that that goes a very long ways. And I think if you get the right people in place and they enjoy their jobs, like he said, they're doing great work. You know, the ability to manage becomes a lot easier. You know, you don't have to engage in a lot of micromanagement and stuff like that. So it's all about, you know, just the attitude, the selection of the person in the role, and allowing them to kind of spread their wings, you know, allowing them to take all the cumulative skills that they've gathered over the years and feel that strong spirit of innovation and push it forward into the product. And I think when you do that, you get the best elements of everything from a company perspective, a product perspective, market readiness, all of those things come together into a great package. So yeah, I definitely agree with everything he mentioned, with maybe those couple extra things from a company management and cultural perspective and all those things.
SkillUp IT Learning is the perfect online destination to learn about DevOps and digital transformation anytime, anywhere. Our digital learning platform provides you with all the resources you need to upskill and learn about these important topics, including expert-led course videos, access to certification prep courses, and a community of supportive peers. Our subscription-based model makes it easy for you to gain the skills needed for success in the modern workplace. Visit devopsinstitute.com now and explore our different learning plans.
Great. That makes me think of one of my former colleagues at Forrester used to say, actually two of them do still some research, excellent research there at Forrester Research. He used to say, happy employees, happy customers. And that goes for all kinds of products, right? So if we have happiness and enjoyment, then that translates into happy customers because we enjoy what we're doing. And this is in your case and in anybody else's case, even flying or driving or ordering or anything like that. So great. Okay.
Yeah. And I was going to add one quick thing on that is you mentioned a happy customers piece, and that is one of the biggest things for us, is that we felt that the products being introduced to the market were way too complex. And, you know, and that obviously leads into a positive customer experience. You know, we wanted to be as seamless and easy to use as possible. And that to us translates to happy customers.
Yep. That makes me think of something else I wanted to ask you. Community outreach. You guys have done something around making sure that there is basic access to internet and things in rural areas, called something called Photon Connect. Is that correct? Can one of you elaborate on what that is? Because I think that is beautiful when I heard about that.
Yeah. So a few years ago when COVID hit, Ian lives in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And that might be one of the most challenging places to get broadband signals into that I've ever seen personally. I'm in Madison, Wisconsin, and comparatively, you know, it's farm pastures out here. It's pretty simple. But we still have a lot of rural broadband challenges as well. It's surprising when you discover just how widespread the problem is across North America still. But when COVID hit, there was some teachers in particular that were having trouble connecting and being able to have their classes, you know, delivered in a way that was actually usable for the kids. So we identified a few of those teachers and reached out to the school board and were able to get them hooked up at no charge to, and Ian actually developed an amazing product that we've gone on to work with commercially, and have some really cool customers that we're working with on the commercial side now, commercial enterprise side. And but yeah, it's called Photon Router, and it's a highly tuned customer premise piece of equipment that takes care of all of the streaming difficulties that you would discover that most people face with much even higher bandwidth coming into the home. So yeah, that was the key. We established our own ISP and essentially got these teachers online so they could teach the classes with some degree of performance and actually be able to interact with the kids and use the Zoom classes and the features that the school board was using, the district was using to try and enable the remote learning that was in place during COVID.
Beautiful, very noble, great idea. All right, cloud repatriation. We've seen it, we're hearing it due to, you know, some FinOps or cost observability organizations are repatriating out of the cloud. Not all, not everything, but we've seen it in the DevOps Institute and talked to our ambassadors and they see it as well. So, Ian, what are some use cases you've seen where cloud repatriation makes sense? Mm-hmm. And I like you to, I know you are, I'm going to call you a nerd, but I mean it as a compliment, not as derogative at all.
That's okay. I get called that a lot.
You get called that a lot. All right. Yeah. Michael calls you a nerd all the time, right? Okay. But instead of looking at it from the technical perspective, I'd like you to focus a little bit on the business value perspective in terms of cloud repatriation. What are some use cases you've seen?
So I think the dynamics have changed a bit. You know, one of the things that I've noticed immediately is, you know, you're starting to see miniaturization in terms of hardware footprint, right? So things that would notoriously kind of take, you know, three rows or more, you know, for large workloads, an example, those are things that you're consolidating down into one or two racks or even less now because of the core counts and the efficiencies that are brought forth with new server technologies. So, you know, when it comes to a real estate perspective, looking at it from, you know, spend, it becomes a much easier scenario for a lot of companies because they can look at that as footprint reduction, less building size, less cooling infrastructure, so forth. All these translate into lower costs. So, what was a major obstacle before in that regard is now been, you know, largely fixed with the efficiencies and the consolidation of hardware. So that's one major driver there. And it makes it possible for people to put very powerful workloads into smaller spaces. So they don't need huge data centers to do that. I think the other element that's important from a business perspective is we know most businesses want to run hybrid workloads. The frustrating part for most of the businesses is they didn't feel there was really a really good standard to essentially control all these devices in the data center. So the DMTF Redfish standard is a great example of an improvement in that area, and that it basically creates a set of extensible schemas, and the purpose is it reaches into servers and storage and other elements in the data center. And really the overall goal is to bring things into a standard unified API that's easy to understand, easy to consume, and above all else is accessible through a multitude of different OEMs. So if a customer puts in a command to power on a server, that would be the same command across a Dell, HP, a Supermicro platform, mm-hmm. and so forth. That's the overall goal. So with those pieces coming in from a business perspective, the elements of automation are more achievable as long as you have a tool set that accommodates that. And that's really where Mojo came in, is we wanted to build that platform to use that standard so people can orchestrate, automate hardware in a very agnostic way. So that those drivers really help out quite a bit. And I think also there's kind of this shock with cloud spend as well. And it's relatively hard to control. And, you know, a lot of customers, they put workloads in there and they have certain expectations, and some of those costs spin out of control. And next thing you know, you're locked into specific technologies maybe this public cloud provider has, and the spend's very high. So customers are looking at ways with the things I mentioned earlier, using those things, bringing it all together and bringing workloads back into, you know, kind of like a smaller on-prem type of footprint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Makes sense. excuse me. I am doing some research, or we at the DevOps Institute have done 5 years of research now on IT upskilling, or we call it Upskilling IT 2023. We just have a report published and we share a lot of the findings there. The top two domain skills or capabilities which are must have are process skills, you know, be it ITIL, IT for IT, DevOps, Agile, Scrum, you know, name them, and technical skills. Those are the two top most important skill domains. When we think about this topic of moving workloads and or data back to on-premise, we'll need skills in a data center. That's one thing. I think that's one challenge I can see already. When everybody wants to have cloud skills and has cloud skills and container skills and all of that wonderful stuff. The second one, political considerations. If I'm the CTO and I decided 3 years ago or 5 years ago, we're going to go all cloud and I'm still around. And now I have to say, sorry, but I think we need to move certain things back. That could be career is over, maybe. Those are just two aspects of cloud repatriation conversations I've had with clients and others. Michael, to you, have you had conversations with your clients on cloud repatriation and hearing other things? And if not other, maybe comment on skills versus cost and a political sassiness?
Yeah. Okay. So a couple good threads there. So I'll start with the discussion around skills. And that was really one of the core reasons why we developed the product. Ian saw a need. We've both had the opportunity to go to data centers of some of the top companies globally. And you see the way they're running things and you recognize that there's a few people that really hold the keys to the castle in there from a hardware perspective, which is that's an exposure. And then being able to knowledge transfer how things are done internally is also a very difficult thing. So we wanted to create really a first-class citizen, if you will, a first-class application that makes that intersection of people and hardware as simple as possible. And that's where Mojo Platform really came in. And Ian has a Navy background. He worked in with some Navy contractors. And the KISS principle, the Keep It Simple, Stupid, principle around, all right, what can we do to build a tool that's just very easy to use, very intuitive, and handles all of this sort of manually heavy and very error-prone activity that's often left to individuals. And in particular, you know, we're talking BIOS upgrades, firmware upgrades, remote provisioning of operating systems, remote booting of operating systems, wiping of hard drives. So, you know, this low level ability to do what you need to do from a server maintenance perspective just was a glaring problem. And having lived through it, you know, he just wanted to create sort of the dream tool, if you will. So handling that skills gap and being able to allow companies to take those resources and repurpose them into more valuable roles was an important consideration for us and one of the core reasons we built Mojo Platform. So, you know, we want to make it so that anybody can come in with minimal training on that tool and be able to build private clouds, build, you know, the pools that are necessary, provide the infrastructure controls, the governance, the RBAC, all the things that are required to have a well-maintained infrastructure that provides what your developers need at with just a few clicks. That we've managed to do. So we're excited about having sort of that phase one of the project, if you will, phase one of our software proven and really loved by our customers. And the next piece of it, the use cases really came to us again, because, you know, open standards, we have Major League Baseball is a big customer of ours. And as an example, you know, they're a hybrid company. They have stadiums all over North America. And data centers, you know, the overall definition of even what a data center is just stretching and changing as we speak. And that's, you know, as we get closer to the edge and as the demands of what compute and storage need to do, because the optimization of the architecture itself requires it. We just, wherever the workload needs to be, we're fine with it. So cloud repatriation yes, it's happening also from just a application perspective where they're like, well, we did a lift and shift because we wanted to get rid of the OpEx of having a data center and the people, right? And then they recognize, holy moly, there is, or I should say the capital expenditure. And there's an incredible operating expenditure in the cloud. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely a break-even point of when you recognize that with the miniaturization and advances in technology and advances in chip power and shrinking of storage, you can do all those things in-house for a lot cheaper. And there's, you know, myriad cases where you can look those up online and just see all of the money that's being saved across the board. And we ourselves have done some really cool work in that regard as well. So the stuff that Major League Baseball is doing is a hybrid cloud. We partnered with Google on it. It's just incredible to see all that's enabled at the edge, sitting on top of Mojo's provisioned servers. And then it bursts up into GCP, 7.2 terabytes of data per game. And they've just got an amazing amount of really cool data that's pulled in there for all of their fans to interact with and see in real time, you know, how far Aaron Judge's home run went when he hit his 62nd one, you know. So it's just amazing all the things they can track, even the speed of the ball as it spins off the pitcher's hand and, you know, more data than you can imagine gets loaded up and used by fans every game. It's the use cases themselves that have really brought this sometimes cloud repatriation, sometimes just natural new build, greenfield space where we have to change the way the solution is architected to really get the optimal footprint to deliver the best experience possible to our customers.
Yeah.
Great.
And I was going to
go ahead, Ian.
Mm-hmm. One quick thing on that. We also understand that in order to have a successful product that works well in a hybrid setting or, you know, in a private data center type of setting to automate different hardware, you really need to make sure that people that are coming from the public cloud find the tool relatively familiar. You know, so from a DevOps perspective, you know, we wanted to make sure that we weren't introducing something that seemed foreign or, you know, monolithic. It's kind of that like fine balance. You know, we want to make sure that we keep it very simple. We also want to make sure that it's also familiar. And, you know, if a DevOps person is working in our system and they prefer to use Ansible, they can use Ansible. If they want to use Terraform, they can certainly use Terraform. So we wanted to keep it very open in that respect as well. You know, bring your own tools, bring your own servers, you know, flexible platform, you know, very much common in terms of things that they would see within the public cloud. A lot of the terms are the same. So we've really worked hard to make sure that the tool is recognizable to people that are coming from those environments, but also, you know, very, very much usable when they're using both of those environments at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Great points. Excellent learning. Super. All right. Last question. And this has nothing to do with any of what we've talked about. Well, maybe I'll leave it up to you, gentlemen. What do you guys do for fun?
Oh, boy. I guess I'll go first. I love music. I jokingly, Ian and I always joke around that this is all just a front for us to be able to put our album out once our company goes public. But we'll see, right? So I've been playing bass for many years, and so that's something, a big hobby of mine for sure. I also play chess. And I have 5 kids, so that keeps me extremely busy. Yes,
excellent. And you, Ian?
Yeah, so me and Mike have some similarities in terms of things we like to do for fun. I mean, music is a big thing for me. I've done it for a long time. I play bass, I play guitar, so I enjoy that. I also just really enjoy working within the community. So a lot of my free time is spent on, you know, things we talked, like Photon Connect, the community improvement project. I want to see how I can improve outcomes for people in the community. And I'm always looking for challenges, you know, things that have been challenges for a very long period of time. Nobody's addressed those. I love those type of things. So when I see them, I try to address them. And if my background and what I've done in my background can help push those things forward within the community, That's one thing I spend a lot of time on. And then the other ones are animal welfare. I'm very much involved in the community when it comes to wildlife and sustaining that and ensuring that, you know, there's some involvement in the communities involved in sustaining the natural wildlife ecosystem here as well.
Excellent. Gentlemen, this has been fantastic. You guys have enriched my life significantly today, and I hope you've enjoyed this conversation as well. Thank you again for all of the learning and the sharing and your last part there on what you do for fun.
It's been a pleasure. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
We've been talking to Michael Wagner, co-founder and CEO of Medify, and Ian Evans, co-founder and CTO of Medify. Gentlemen, again, thank you very much for your time joining me today on Humans of DevOps podcast, and have a great Medify journey, I'll say.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Humans of DevOps podcast is produced by DevOps Institute. Our audio production team includes Julia Pape, Daniel Newman-Schultz, and Brendan Lay. Shout out to those colleagues of mine who do a wonderful job also at their day and recording and making sure things are well. I'm Humans of DevOps podcast executive producer, Evelyn Ehrlich. If you would like to join us on a podcast, please contact us at humansofdevopspodcast@devopsinstitute.com. I'm Evelyn Ehrlich. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.